Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On the weekend, the final gavel dropped on this year's 2024 legislative session. This hour, I'll look back at the highlights with the help of several State House journalists. Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital Dispatch. Robin covers the State House, but also is a political reporter with Iowa Capital Dispatch. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Nice to be here, Ben.
In our Des Moines studio, we have Aaron Murphy, the Des Moines Bureau Chief of the Gazette. Hi, Aaron.
Hello, Ben. Thanks for having me.
And there with Aaron, Katarina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
And we will soon see changes in laws relating to taxes, education, mental health. We want to go through some of those today. We had that flurry of action over the weekend, as is typical toward the end of the session. The AEAs, we want to talk about those, but also tax cuts, religious freedom, immigration, those permits to carry guns at school, other priorities, Republican priorities, as the Republicans hold all the levers of power once again in this legislative session. If you'd like to join our conversation and ask about a particular bill, this is a good hour to do that. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, let's start with education, since that was a big part of this session here, and that AEA bill, controversial. Also with that, the raising minimum teacher pay to $50,000 per year. Robin, start us off and tell us a little bit more about the AEA bill and what happened there.
Of course. So this was something that was named as a top priority of Governor Reynolds at the beginning of session. Where it ended up after pretty lengthy negotiations, especially with House Republicans who were not as comfortable with the governor's original proposal, what was passed and signed into law allows 90% of school districts' special education funding from the state and the federal government to go to the school districts first, but then go directly next to AEAs, but allows retention of 10% of those funds over the course of 2 years of implementation. For general education and media services, which are also parts of funding that currently goes directly to AEAs, those would go directly to school districts. For discretion of those funds, they can continue working with the AEAs or they could use that money elsewhere. That bill also raised teacher starting salaries to a minimum of $50,000, as well as increasing teachers with 12 years of experience to $62,000.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Murphy, how did lawmakers shape the governor's original proposal, and why? Give us a sense of the debate and why it was controversial here.
Yeah, the governor's proposal went farther than what Robin described there, and it originally would have sent a vast majority of those dollars, those special education dollars, straight to the schools and allowed them that full discretion to use those as they see fit. And that was where the biggest pushback mm-hmm. came, and where the biggest change was made in the bill. And the worry was that the effect would be that these services would go away in some cases, that uncertainty, the AEAs not knowing whether schools would be spending that money on them, on their special education services, that would cause chaos for them and ultimately lead to reduction of those special education services, which obviously for parents and families with students who use those services is obviously something very sensitive and something they were very passionate about. So there was a lot of feedback, and this was a bill that dominated the legislative session for the first couple of months until it was passed, because it was one that was, like I said, people were very passionate about. Lawmakers heard a lot about when they were going back home for the weekend, and ultimately they landed on the bill as Robin described it.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of turnover, the Des Moines Register documenting this, among AEA staff, early retirements, and otherwise, about 3,500 AEA staff in the 9 agencies across the state. Aaron, what can be said? Do we know yet how this will impact those students with special education needs, and what parents of those students should be thinking about in how that will be different in the future? Do we know yet?
I don't think we totally know, but what you described is kind of the first signal of the worry of what a lot of people who were against this proposal have been warning about. And what they said, what you would hear people argue, is that even though you kept 90% of that special education funding piece in place, like normal status quo, even that 10%, and then even that the other part of it, but with the general and media services, the argument was those aren't necessarily completely separate bowls, completely separate, silos that by creating uncertainty there, it creates uncertainty throughout the AEAs. And so we're starting to, as you described, Ben, we're starting to see that a little bit. And then I think you asked the big question that we'll all be watching is, to what extent does this have an impact? And, in a vacuum, it shouldn't impact the special education students because of that 90-10 that stayed, as Robin described. Mm-hmm. But I think we're already seeing evidence that it very well could, as some people warned.
Yeah, and I think a fundamental difference in how the governor is seeing this compared to Democratic lawmakers, the governor is saying these are essentially 9 businesses spread across the state. The Democrats taking exception to that. Let's move on to another K-12 education measure. This one awaiting the governor's signature. Robin, perhaps you can fill us in on the law that deals with arming public school staff.
Yep, so that was actually signed into law on Friday. It allows schools, it implements a training procedure and a permitting service for school districts and school boards that approve armed school staff policies. So allowing teachers or other school staff to carry firearms on school grounds, essentially as a measure, as supporters argue, to allow them to have on the ground quick responses in cases of a school shooting. So what this primarily dealt with, Iowa already in law allows schools to adopt policies for armed school staff. However, school districts like Spirit Lake, which have tried to implement these policies, have been denied liability insurance. So what this law does is create a process. The training and permitting process is meant to address that, as is a stipulation that staff who have firearms through these policies are given qualified immunity for reasonable application of force. So if something were to happen, they would have liability in lawsuits. And lawmakers were hoping with that bill to address the denial of insurance and allow school districts to actually implement these policies if they so choose.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Murphy, this is an entirely partisan divide on this bill. Highly controversial passion on both sides here, aren't there?
Yeah, you talk to or you hear from Democrats and gun control advocates on this, and they feel strongly and a lot of education officials too, that although not all of them, there are some folks in education who think this is a good idea, but the vast majority are very uncomfortable with the idea of having guns in the classroom, even as a means of a deterrent or defense against a possible active shooter situation. So it's a very much an ideological divide on this one.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the other education aspect here, increasing teacher pay, Robin. How did that come about, and why did it come about as part of this AEA measure?
Yeah, so this was something that another initiative that the governor proposed at the beginning of the year. So Iowa, as part of its workforce shortage, has had trouble recruiting teachers. Increasing pay is, of course, a measure to try to help recruit and retain staff with that 62,000 portion for experienced teachers as well. This is something that, of course, had pretty wide bipartisan support, but how it ended up, the House had a separate measure that they passed on teacher pay that was separate from the AEA bill and had bipartisan support. But in that final AEA legislation, as it was passed, it incorporated changes to the area education agencies, teacher pay, as well as state supplemental aid funding. So the per pupil funding for the public K-12 system. Democrats voted against that despite supporting the teacher pay and education funding components, especially Senate Democrats criticized it as political log rolling, combining a bunch of disparate measures into one to get the votes necessary to pass.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron, when we talk about education as a whole, how much were the Democrats able to shape this session's measures when we look back?
Yeah, I don't know that they had a ton of influence. I mean, in the minority party, I think legislators in the Republican majority listened to some of the concerns, like we talked about earlier with the AEAs, that Democrats had also been raising, but it was more that they were also hearing that from their constituents back home, I think, than it was that they were taking the advice or counsel of Democrats. So I think, which is fairly typical, the minority party was mostly on the sidelines for these major reforms that we saw this year.
Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief of the Gazette, Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital Dispatch, and Katarina Sestarek of IPR. If you'd like to join us as we walk through some of the highlights, you can shape our discussion with a question about this year's legislative session, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com. Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
Back with more of River to River from IPR News, I'm Ben Kiefer. On the weekend, the final gavel came down on this Iowa legislative session for 2024. So we're walking through in some detail and flying over some other ones because of the shortness of time, the highlights of the legislative session with Katarina Sestarek, our IPR state government reporter, Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital Dispatch, and Aaron Murphy of the Gazette. If you'd like to join us with a question about a specific measure, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We dealt in the initial part of the program with some healthcare highlights. There's certainly plenty more of those, and we'll perhaps circle back to those. But let's move on to healthcare, significant bills signed into law. The so-called MOMS program changed there. Katarina, catch us up to speed on that.
Yeah, so a little while back, the legislature approved funding to go to anti-abortion pregnancy resource centers that can give people who are expecting a baby, you know, diapers, counseling, pregnancy tests, things like that. But they're associated with groups that are against abortion and therefore try to discourage people from getting an abortion. And so there was already state funding that was supposed to go to these centers, but the state hadn't been able to find an administrator for the program that the law required. They failed twice through an RFP process to get one of these administrators. And so this year, the legislature came back and they kind of tweaked the law to let the state directly administer that program, or to have an administrator that doesn't have experience that was required by the previous law, because this program never existed in Iowa before, so there wasn't an administrator with experience. So basically just making it easier to actually get this program started. And the state had already announced which groups that it was going to send money to for this.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Murphy, Democrats condemning this program. They say, for one, it gives inaccurate medical information. But of course, we have abortion as one of the top issues nationwide here. How does that fit into the bigger picture here of what's going on across the country, what was signed into law here with the Moms Program changes?
Yeah, I think you described it right. It's just sort of a piece of that broader conversation that is certainly happening in our political arena right now, and nationally, and then especially in Iowa, with some of the other things that we have going on right now with the Iowa Supreme Court having just recently heard oral arguments on the so-called fetal heartbeat law, that if it would go into effect, would effectively ban abortions after roughly 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is typically before the woman's even aware she's pregnant. So opponents of that law say that it would effectively ban abortions in the state. We'll get a ruling on that in the coming weeks or months. And there was another bill earlier in the session that did not pass, but it contained some language that that critics, Democrats, said would threaten in vitro fertilization methods for people who are having trouble getting pregnant to get pregnant, and that bill died for that reason. So this Moms Program, that bill, the Iowa Supreme Court, there's a lot going on right now legislatively in the courts, and then I have absolutely no doubt we will hear a lot on the campaign trail, in on this whole topic in this whole arena right now.
Mm-hmm. Katarina, back to you and some other health care changes. One measure that passed, postpartum Medicaid coverage. Tell us about that.
Right. So under current law, people who are covered by Medicaid when they're pregnant, which Iowa has very generous income limits for getting Medicaid coverage when you're pregnant. Right now, that coverage, though, lasts just 60 days after you give birth. And Iowa is only one of two or three states that has that policy. The other states all have a longer period of time. So this session, the lawmakers voted to extend that to a year after giving birth. That coverage will last. This also, though, lowers the income eligibility limit. And so, you know, Democrats really criticize that, because while it is extending the time frame that people have this coverage, it is also going to lower the number of people who will qualify for it.
Mm-hmm. Robin Opsahl, back to you, and we'll stay with health care, but to mental health care, substance use services. There's the governor here wanting to reshape mental health and substance use treatment in Iowa. What happened on that front?
Yeah, so the bill that the governor introduced, establishing the behavioral health support system, I believe it's called, was approved. So this is something that takes the current mental health system, the mental health and disability services system, as well as the state's addiction and both for substance abuse as well as other addictions like gambling. Those two are disparate systems, and it combines them into a new system that I believe has 9 districts that will have these services available throughout the state. Disability services would then go under a different category within HHS. So it seemed like it was something that had bipartisan support, And is really a restructuring to how the state administers public mental health care services.
In healthcare, a bill that failed, a birth control expansion that would have enabled those seeking birth control to get it, I understand, from a pharmacist without first seeing a doctor. Katarina, that not making it through the legislature.
Yeah, this has been going on for a long time. Governor Kim Reynolds first proposed this, I think, in 2019, after she was first elected. And it's come up every year since then, and it has always failed to pass in the House specifically. The Senate has voted for this before. As you said, it some people call it over-the-counter birth control, but it's not quite over-the-counter. People would have to talk to a pharmacist to get that birth control and would eventually, under various iterations of this proposal, would eventually have to see a doctor after, about a year or a different time frame to make sure that it's going okay. But again, part of kind of what we've been talking about, the overall effort to ban abortion and then to maybe also have some other supports in place for people if they can't get abortions, birth control, as the governor has said, birth control can prevent unintended pregnancies. So that would be a way to prevent the need for an abortion in some cases. But House Republicans have just not been able to get enough votes to pass it.
Mm-hmm. And also in the list that did not make it through the legislature this session, we can talk about whether we're going to likely see this in the 2025 session. To you, Aaron, also fitting into the national abortion access or reproductive rights debate here, the so-called death of an unborn person bill here, more prison time for terminating a pregnancy.
Yeah, and that was the one I was alluding to earlier, that people questioned whether that could impact in vitro fertilization. So it was an interesting process to see play out, because it started as a bill that would was originally designed to increase penalties for someone who causes a lost pregnancy. And generally speaking here, the idea had been like if a pregnant woman was the victim of an assault, of a physical assault, and mm-hmm. it cost the caused the pregnancy to be terminated, you could increase the penalties for the termination of that pregnancy too. And then Republicans amended that bill to take it a step further, and they introduced what's become known shorthand as personhood legislation, defining life as beginning at fertilization. And that is the part then the people said, well, hold up now. Part of the in vitro fertilization process can involve the discarding of unused embryos. And so that called into question whether this bill, if it passed into law, would make this process of people just trying to get pregnant illegal. And that's ultimately what doomed that bill.
Mm-hmm. Katarina, you've been covering this issue. Comment here.
I think is interesting to just the person who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee that, would have considered this bill, but he chose to not bring it up. He's a Republican who's facing a very competitive race this year. The issue of IVF has been very politically charged after what happened in Alabama. And I think, he said his decision wasn't related to his reelection effort, that it was just a personal issue for him. But, I think it is just very politically charged right now.
Yeah.
And to that point, I'm sorry, Ben, mm-hmm. if I may just tack on real quick.
Please.
To that point, that bill passed the House. House Republicans passed it through that chamber. It only didn't become law because the Senate did not pass it, as Katarina said.
Mm-hmm. Also, not passing through the legislature, we heard the so-called Meat Baby Olivia measure tied to a video. Robin Upsall, remind us what that was, because this reaches into our 7 through 12 grades in our public schools as far as human growth development classes that many of us remember from those grades.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that would have required those health classes to show videos and animated designs showing the development of a fetus throughout the stages of pregnancy, in addition to ultrasound videos, as well as some other content related to fetal development. So this is something that a Senate amendment proposed taking out the language, but the House version of the bill specifically referenced the Meet Baby Olivia video. This is a video that has been codified into law to be required to be shown in classes in other states, I believe some of Iowa's surrounding states, that was developed by a anti-abortion group. And some Planned Parenthood, other reproductive rights advocates were very strongly against this bill for putting political messages into classrooms, potentially, as well as, you know, even with that reference to that specific video taken out, saying that it was still, I mean, the bill still contained language referencing, quote unquote, the humanity of an unborn child. So they were saying that by mandating curriculum that is political, that's not something that schools should be doing or that legislatures should be implementing as part of education policy.
Mm-hmm. And in a broader view of curriculum in our K through 12 schools, Aaron Murphy, to you on this, we had the revision, reviewing and revising educational standards, but also curriculum. What direction did the Republican-dominated legislature want to drive, shape the curriculum in our K through 12?
Yeah, well, I'll just piggyback right off of what Robin was just describing that didn't pass into law and talk about something similar in a different subject that did pass into law, and that's social studies curriculum that was literally written by a conservative organization. And it doesn't it's a social studies curriculum that emphasizes the benefits and highlights of and it says specifically in it Western civilization. Mm-hmm. It calls for the celebration of certain historical figures in the country's past, in the U.S. past, and essentially what it is. There is a belief among Republicans and conservatives that some aspects of public education in the country have become overly critical of U.S. history and certain moments in U.S. history. And this is, to simplify it, a way to include some social studies curriculum, some U.S. history's curriculum that also celebrates moments in U.S. history as well, and so critics of that said that it's overly, you know, maybe naive is maybe the right word to some of the errors of the country's past. While the supporters of the legislation say, you know, you still teach about all those other things, we're just also would want a curriculum that celebrates those moments in American history as well. So, and that was one that did get passed into law.
Another one passed, and this ties into what you were just talking about, Aaron, to higher education, eliminating these diversity and equity and inclusion positions at state universities. Robin Upsall, tell us a little bit more about where they arrived in the final bill that passed here.
Yeah, so this was something that started to be discussed last year in terms of DEI offices. This is something that the Iowa Board of Regents has already implemented, but what the state is now requiring is that anything on diversity, equity, and inclusion, specifically the offices that universities have, must be dissolved for things that aren't required under federal requirements, either as policies or as stipulations to continue to receive federal funding.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron Murphy, this was this sort of tailored back, moderated from what some Republicans wanted to do with DEI positions at state universities?
No, I feel like this is pretty close to what they had originally posed. And like Robin said, this was a multi-year effort. This has been a discussion going on. And actually what was passed into law this year was essentially had already become practice because the State Board of Regents started doing those things. And this just put that into law. And so I think this is essentially what Republicans in the legislature wanted to see in curtailing limiting these programs. I believe the language in the bill says the exception is for if they need to do something to comply with federal law, mm-hmm. then those types of programs are allowed. My sense is it went as far as they were hoping it would.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll be back after a short break. More from Aaron Murphy of the Gazette, Katarina Stark of IPR, and Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital's Dispatch, our three State House journalists, breathing a little sigh of relief, I have to say, after a great session covering this session of the Iowa Legislative. It's always a fast pace for the journalists working there. We sure appreciate their observations on this Monday after a weekend when the final gavel dropped on this year's legislative session. We're looking back at the highlights this week. We'd like to have you join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment with more of River to River.
Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
And we're back with more of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer, looking back at the highlights of this 2024 legislative session. Final gavel dropped on the session in the wee hours of Saturday, I think 4 something in the morning. And so we have some journalists with us, no doubt recovering not only from the entire session, the long hours there, but from the final flurry of activity at the State House. 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org to ask questions of Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital Dispatch, Aaron Murphy of the Gazette, and IPR's Katarina Sestarik. Let's go to our phones. Suzanne is with us in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I hope you're not as, I'm not as scratchy as you are on my phone. I just wanted to comment about this curriculum, this history curriculum. There is an attempt to take out completely the word democratic form of government and to replace it with a Republican. It actually says all through the document that I read, and it was an earlier version of republicanism, that is what our form of government, not a democratic system of government, which I found a little eerie. And also, I had to read it several times because it is not, there is no standard for learning about South America, Central America, Africa, Asia. It's striking that you could erase, in terms of standards, any knowledge of the rest of the world. So I'm really disturbed by this legislation. And the earlier, I don't know whether maybe the guests can tell me, but it also bars any kind of credit for political action, so writing to your congressman or going to the State House. And there was supposed to be a citizenship test that you had to pass in order to pass high school. And that if you didn't at any Regents University, you would have to pass it to, in order to graduate from college. I don't know whether that mm-hmm. was retained Let's, into the final form, and maybe
right.
somebody could tell me.
Suzanne, good fodder for discussion. Let's see if any of our panelists want to weigh in. Suzanne and Grinnell, thank you for now.
I'll just say first, and Katarina and or Robin if can elaborate if I miss anything. I don't believe any of those things that were just described were in the final piece of the legislation that passed. In fact, some of it I don't recall hearing about it all. I wonder if that was some of those that stuff was in one of those bills that gets introduced early in the session, but doesn't really go anywhere. The one that I did remember was the citizenship test, and that has been in different bills over recent years, but that was not in the final product that passed into law. And the first thing, again, I will speak to, I don't believe that that passed either, but the Democrat versus Republican thing, I know you hear these days the statement by conservatives that we're not a democracy, we're a democratic republic, and that kind of parsing of language of words. But again, I don't think that was in the bill that passed either.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Yeah, go ahead, Robin.
Apologies. So I believe, from my understanding, the civics test is something that Reynolds has pushed for in several sessions. But if I'm remembering correctly, I don't believe that's a part of this bill. Like Aaron said, there was some replacing of language in terms of referring to the U.S. government as a republic. It was not necessarily referring to it as Republican, but there was language, like Aaron said, there is a shift, especially among some conservatives, to reference the U.S. as a republic instead of a democracy. There certainly was a shift in terms of the, I believe in the Iowa Board of Education's current standards, there's a call for a global perspective to be included in history and social studies curriculum. That certainly, under the legislation, the Iowa Board of Education is being directed to revise their social studies standards and have that be a more U.S., Iowa, and Western civilization-focused curriculum standards. That is not necessarily banning information or banning the instruction on other societies and other history throughout the world. However, something that Democrats brought up was that, with these standards and with the requirement that are being outlined under the bill, there might not be time to cover other other cultures or other part of history as might be done in current history classrooms.
Right. Just as in a radio discussion hour about the legislative highlights, there's only so much time, and what you don't talk about gets crowded out by the things that you do talk about. So this is something similar going on there. Katarina Sestarek, before this gets crowded out, before our hour ends, I wanted to have you comment on the boards and commissions measure here that has been talked about throughout the session, I believe.
Yeah, this is one of Governor Reynolds' big priorities for the session. There's 256 state boards and commissions that do things ranging from licensing doctors to hearing civil rights complaints to just advising government on certain matters. And so she wanted to eliminate and merge and change the duties of a bunch of these commissions. The legislature did make some changes to her original proposal, but they passed quite a bit of it. And, Republicans are making the argument that this is going to be more efficient government, that it's going to be, just not wasting time on what they see as wasting time or energy in so many different boards and commissions, and being able to merge some of those things and get rid of ones that don't, have become obsolete. But there's certain changes that, Democrats really took issue with, and several Republicans too, actually, particularly one that would essentially take quite a bit of the authority away from the Iowa Civil Rights Commission that hears civil rights complaints and put it with a director of the agency. Right now, that commission decides which complaints to hear and makes those decisions. And there's just a lot of concern that putting that with just a director who's appointed by the governor could undermine, some civil rights protections in Iowa.
The final 10 minutes with Katarina Sestarek of IPR, Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital Dispatch, and Aaron Murphy of The Gazette. We worked through some highlights of this recently adjourned 2024 legislative session here in Iowa. Deborah is with us in Ames. Thanks for waiting, Deborah. What did you want to bring to our attention?
want to say that, to me, there are a couple of themes that characterize this legislative session. And one of them is taking away of rights. There were no, I mean, the idea of civil rights are that they're constantly expanding. This legislature has just taken away, and it's been attacking vulnerable group after vulnerable group, whether it's homophobia, misogyny, racism. It's that has just characterized the whole legislative session. And then the second theme, I think, is the centralization of power, which is also equally worrisome, if not more. And I've been very disheartened, and I just think it's terrible what's going on.
Deborah and Ames, thank you for your comment. Panelists, jump in if you'd like to do that. Otherwise, we'll move on.
Well, the one thing I'll say is that the latter, the centralization of authority, that piggybacks perfectly off of what Katarina just described with the boards and commissions bill, which is basically the year two, phase two bill of her broader executive branch of government reorganization, which started with an even bigger bill in last year's session. And then that is what our caller just referenced. That is one of the chief criticisms and concerns that has been raised around those combined efforts by the governors, that it's placing an outsized increased authority in the governor's office because it's sort of streamlining everything underneath the governor and tying a more direct line back to the governor's office through all these different state agencies, boards, commissions, etc.
Mm-hmm. Katarina, comment on a bill that did not pass that concerns pesticides. That did not pass. What was the measure proposing there?
Yeah, this was proposed by Bayer, which now owns Monsanto. Specifically, it could have covered almost all pesticides, but, you know, there's been a lot of lawsuits over Roundup and people saying that they got cancer because they were using Roundup. It's a weed killer, very common weed killer that's produced in Iowa. And Bayer has faced billions of dollars in lawsuits for, you know, people alleging that they failed to warn them of the health risk that they could get cancer from this. So this bill would essentially limit those types of lawsuits, prevent those types of lawsuits in Iowa, with Bayer saying that the EPA doesn't say that their product causes cancer. So why should they be warning people of that? But on the other side, you have lawyers who are representing these people who have cancer, who are suing Bayer or want to sue Bayer or other companies, saying that, you know, they've gotten these horrible illnesses from pesticide exposure. And so this did not end up getting through, but it's very likely to come up again in the next session.
Mm-hmm. Before this session of radio ends, let's talk about taxes quickly, Aaron. Sum that up, because and we can look forward to the next 2025 session, because what the GOP has planned here does extend into next year, perhaps.
Yeah, so we already had some tax reductions being implemented that were passed in previous sessions, and so that was already happening. Rates were already being – the state income tax rates were already being reduced, and what was just passed here towards the end of the session in the last days, it essentially accelerates that process to now even sooner. We're going to, and I believe, Katarina, is it by next year? Was it 2025? We'll be down to a 3.8% state income tax rate, just that one rate for almost all Iowa taxpayers. So again, just advancing that proposal that was already on the books. And this one was interesting because it picked up even more Democrat support than previous tax reduction bills. And what I heard during debate on the floor was they said, hey, this one, unlike previous versions in their view, this bill will help middle class, working class, whichever preferred term is there, Iowans, unlike the previous installments, which they said favored the wealthiest Iowans. So a lot of Democrats voted for this one, too. And so that'll speed up that process.
Mm-hmm. Let's squeeze in a question from Matt in Scott County and Bill in Sac County, both wanting to know the status of a bill impacting state exemptions for owners of forest and fruit tree reservations. Who knows about that?
Yeah, so that bill originally would have let counties end this property tax exemption for forest and fruit tree reservations. There were a lot of concerns about that just because Iowa already doesn't have many trees and the derecho took out a lot of trees. And so people were worried that this would make it even less likely for there wouldn't be an incentive for people to keep trees on their land, sections of trees. And so, but this actually ended up did not end up passing. The Senate didn't take it up in the end.
Mm-hmm. In the final minute or two, observations about how this will affect our election 2024, the Iowa Senate firmly in the hands of Republicans, 34 GOP members, 16 Democrats by the count I saw on Ballotpedia, the Iowa House, 64 Republicans, 36 Democrats. Aaron Murphy, do you see this election perhaps changing power, possibly? Of course, the governor was up for re-election last time, and she won that handily in 2022. So that's not up, but many lawmakers' seats are.
Yeah, the short answer there is no, absolutely not. Only because of the numbers that you just listed there, Ben. The majorities are too big for that to change in one election cycle. The question is, can Democrats close that gap? Can they begin the process of making those numbers smaller so that over multiple cycles, eventually they can earn a majority back in one chamber or the other? And I'll just say, Ben, real quick, to all the things we were talking about, when you are hearing from candidates this fall, if it's a Democrat, you're going to be hearing a lot about abortion and AEAs. And if it's a Republican, I assume you're going to be hearing a lot about tax cuts.
And immigration. Mm-hmm.
And immigration.
Oh, immigration. We had a bill. We weren't able to touch on that this hour. But that's certainly also part of the state lawmaking process this time around. Plenty of time to talk about that in the future. Measures here that did not make it this time that you're sure will come back to life, panelists, in 2025?
Well, Katarina mentioned the pesticide one. I'm sure she's right about that. I think we'll see eminent domain back on the agenda as long as that doesn't happen.
I think the Senate will keep trying to push judicial nominating changes for district judges, for picking district judges as well.
Mm-hmm. And the birth control without a physician's visit, I know there's enough support to at least keep the discussion moving.
Yeah. Robin Upsall, when you looked to 2025, I know you want a good breather before that. But when you looked to 2025, what will you be looking and watching for?
Yeah, I think another thing, including what they mentioned, is House Republicans and House Democrats wanted to take action on nursing homes, and particularly nursing home oversight. A few components of their proposals were put into budget bills at the end of session, but in terms of, you know, more substantive changes, I believe those will come up again as well.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, Mike in Fairfield wants to know about the rainy day fund, the GOP saying it should not be used for education or health care. Aaron, can you tackle that quickly? What is the state of the rainy day fund?
It's healthy. I don't know what the number is. It's a large number. The state's reserve accounts are full, and what he's alluding to there, I believe, is Republicans like to say that they don't want to use those pools of money. They call that one-time money to fund ongoing programs that need funding every year in the legislature. The point being that once that limited pool runs out, now what do you do with that program in year 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yeah.
So they don't like to use those pools for those purposes.
Thank you very much. Our time has run out. Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief of the Gazette, Robin Upsall, State House and political reporter with Iowa Capital Dispatch, and our own Katarina Sestarik, our state government reporter here at IPR. Katarina, Robin, Aaron, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Let me throw in here, too, if you were interested in today's themes, do turn up at the next Pints in Politics. That's this Thursday, April 25th, at Big Grove in Cedar Rapids. I'll be there with a panel of Gazette journalists, a live event, and we'll have highlights from that this Friday. But if you'd like to attend in person, go to thegazette.com. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the Ghost Army, a deception unit launched toward the end of the Second World War to fool the Germans on the battlefields of Europe. That's on tomorrow's program. Today's program produced by Samantha McIntosh with help from Maddie Willis. Also, thanks to Tony Sarabia for technical support. I'm Ben Kiefer. Take care.